Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. And Peter Carey's new novel, Amnesia, an Internet Worm, opens the locks on the cells of Australian prisons and thousands of U.S. prisons as well. After all, the computer systems were designed by an American company. Is this a mistake or a declaration of cyber war? And does it have anything to do with the largely forgotten Battle of Brisbane between American and Australian forces in 1942? Peter Carey writes about this in Amnesia. He is a two-time winner of the Booker Prize for his novels Oscar and Lucinda and The True History of the Kelly Gang. Again, his new novel is Amnesia, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Peter Carey to The Book Show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure.
Nice to be here, Joe.
Very nice to have you with us. I found this book fascinating, and the obvious question is, did it come out of, because of what you're dealing with, because of the issues which we'll talk about, how much of it came out of the Julian Assange case?
Well, the Julian Assange case certainly set this alight. Because, in fact, he's an Australian, because I was sitting in New York listening to American politicians calling him a traitor, and I was saying, hang on, guys, you know, he's actually an Australian, so how can he be an American traitor? It doesn't work. And among the many things I thought of all the things that the connections between Australia and America and the things that people have forgotten or just don't know about. So, for instance, if I sit here today and I say to you, Joe, the CIA destabilized and overthrew the Australian government in 1975, I do believe you'd be shocked and surprised, or you've read the book, so maybe not so. And I think none of my friends in New York know about this thing. So there's things when you're the small country in the relationship. No one knows we sent our troops to Vietnam. No one knows that American and Australian soldiers killed each other in the streets of Brisbane. So this is a book that's actually, unusually for me, really written for, it's written for my Australian friends who seem to have forgotten or denied what happened in the past. It's written for my American friends who don't need to know any of this weird history to understand it, because everything you need to know, you don't need to take a history lesson to read the book. So it's written for them as well. And Julian Assange, yes, although it's not about Assange, it's about the other things that sort of Assange's situation and Assange's actions triggered.
You had an opportunity to write a book with Assange?
my publisher in New York is Sonny Mato, who's been my publisher for many, many years, and we were just having lunch one day, and it just happened to be the day when Sonny had bought the rights to Assange's biography. So he'd just done this. And I was talking about Assange and the issue of Australia and Australia's forgotten history, and proposing, not really for Assange, but the notion of a character whose motivation might be a sort of a payback for things that have happened in the past. And we had a long line, and Sonny said, I don't suppose you'd like to write the book, the Assange book. I said, not really. Not really because I'm a novelist, I don't have that skill set. Not really because novelists are sort of control freaks who are trying to manipulate the world on the page. And not also because if I was Assange or anybody who was a victim of the biographer, I'd be trying to control the story of my life. So I didn't think it was the right thing for me. But my diary shows, and I really looked this up last week, my diary showed that the next day after my lunch, I went back home and started writing Amnesia. And so it really did. But it's born of that moment, and then it's born of a moment in 1975 when our government was overthrown.
That is, to me, the most fascinating part of this story. And as you indicated a moment ago, that this happened in my lifetime, and I had no real knowledge of it at all. And I guess not just the incident, but that it had such a profound effect on the country and what it has done for American-Australian relations. With that in mind, why do you think it is that it is so forgotten and lost in the ether?
Well, there are a number of reasons. Firstly, you know, when I'm saying the CIA overthrew it through the government, there is no such thing. These things are always complicated and always messy. And my God, if you want to look at how the CIA got away with their coup in Iran when they installed the Shah, it was a great mess. And Australia was a very complicated mess. It wasn't just the CIA. There was the local ruling class, manufacturing class, people who had newspapers like Mr. Murdoch and Mr. Packett were a huge part of all of this. So they made it very, they controlled the flow of information. They made it look like the elected government had somehow done something wrong, etc., etc. But apart from the paucity of information, the huge flood of misinformation, which was part of this action, you've got to think about how Australians think about Americans. And it is complicated. But I think the first thing is there's a sense of camaraderie, affection. You know, I grew up with my mother saying the Japanese were going to kill her baby, but the Americans came and saved me in the Battle of the Coral Sea. So there's all of that. I don't think we could really bear to believe that America had done this to us, even if later when one gets to understand the logic for this action, which a lot of it has to do with a base that's in Australia right now, which you need, or the people who do it need, if they're going to fire a drone at a target in Afghanistan, that attack is targeted from a base in Australia. That base was then and is now very important to the United States.
You write very early in the novel, I had published several books, 50 features, 1,000 columns, mainly concerned with the traumatic injury done to my country by our American allies in 1975, while my colleagues leapt to the conclusion that the hacker was concerned simply with freeing boat people from Australian custody. I took the same view as our American allies, that this was an attack on the United States. And in that, this character who is a journalist who is going through a court battle, which he has lost, and is looking for
a disgraced journalist.
A disgraced journalist by the court standards. Mm. By the court standards. Mm. And is looking for a job and perhaps redemption in some way. And as you say several times in the book, of not wanting to be that reporter who just rewrites press releases.
Yes, no. Well, Felix is a character who, for Australian readers, is a sort of a recognisable sort of a person, although he's not a stereotype, but that is, he does like a glass of wine, perhaps to excess. He's very opinionated. He would see himself as always going to tell the truth, never going to sell out. And his life is a mess, generally speaking, and he can't get a job. So he does wish to tell the truth. He does despise the people who rewrite press releases. But his life itself is not really unblemished.
So the character is Felix Moore, and he is enlisted to try and tell the story of Gabby, who is accused of releasing this internet worm on the world.
Yes, and at the stage when his wife's kicked him out of the house, when he can't get a job, along comes his mate, another sort of an Australian type, although maybe, you know, we might have them in Albany too, I'm not sure. But in any case, his great mate, an old friend, is certainly of the left in politics. He's also a property developer, a patron of the arts, maybe tone deaf, but is still on the opera board, the chair of the opera board. And somebody who Felix has known for a long time and in physical, you know, street fighting and demonstrations, has always looked after him. So he's the one that comes to him and says, look, I've bailed out this young woman who the United States wants to extradite, and I've got to her before she can be extradited. Now what I want you to do is to write the story of her life, mate, so people will like her. And that's the job that Felix takes.
one of the aspects of the novel that I found fascinating is that we often think of technology as a young person's game. And yet what you look at very, very pointedly is this idea of privacy and how a younger generation versus an older generation view that privacy. And it's fascinating.
I'm confused by the question, only because I would have typically taken so many different points of view with the characters on the subject. So,
I mean, these are a different view of privacy. A younger generation has a different view, and how aware are they of what would have happened in 75, obviously, but also what we deal with today.
Yes, well, I mean, I think, just to speak generally about the younger generation and privacy, I mean, I can think of there's some pretty smart young people in this book, and they, you know, the two hackers, Frederick and Gabriel, have no doubt that they have no privacy at all. And they are so aware of the powers of being hacked that they understand that a car can be hacked, that its engine can be stopped, it can be accelerated to 120 miles an hour and turned over without anybody being in the car to do that to it. When there's a truck that turns up in the book, it's an old one that doesn't have a computer. Those sort of people are savvy. But I think, generally speaking, what we're seeing with young people are sort of people who are being sort of careless about their privacy, what they're operating in what you might as well call the naked playground, where they're exposing themselves to the whole world forever, and they're being careless about it. I think there are just lots of different stages of knowledge amongst young people.
When you look at the character of Gabby and the relationship with Felix, what kind of dynamic did you want between these two characters?
I sought a dynamic, Joe. I think it's rather than I wanted one, you know, because I'm the novelist, I'm making up this story, right. And here's this journalist who's a friend of Gabby's mother, and she doesn't seem to be getting on well with the mother. So when I'm coming to write it, I'm thinking, how is this going to work? You know, does she really want to be interviewed? Does she not want to be interviewed? She acts at first as if she really doesn't. Then it becomes clear she really does. She wants to be in control of the story. I think it's not an accident that most of the information that Felix can extract from her, he extracts via old-fashioned tape recordings. Can't be hacked. and in that way, although she gives him a lot of material, she's sort of in control of what she's telling him. All of the information that he puts together, like a sleuth, like a detective, he's getting from all sorts of sources. And some of them are reliable and some of them are not. So he's having, I suppose you could say he's having a relationship with the information and the information and how to get it. And he's using, the reason Felix is the way he is, the reason he sort of likes to drink a little bit too much and is not above changing a quote or two if it suits him, or reporting a rumor as a fact, is because he's the one that's going to have to tell this whole big story, and no one in the world has been there to observe all these things except Felix, with his loose relationship with the truth, can tell the whole story. So it's the relationship. He has a relationship with her. His relationship with her is sort of an imaginary one, I suppose you would say. He's predisposed to like her. He attributes to her sort of his own motives, which turn out not to be exactly his. But he likes her. He thinks she's got a lot of guts. He thinks his generation didn't have enough guts, and they were cowardly, and Felix is indeed often quite cowardly, although in the end he's perhaps a bit more than that. So he sees this absolutely, that this is a case of, you know, that Gabby is paying back the United States for 1975. Gabby, as it turns out, doesn't actually see it quite like that.
Peter Carey is our guest. The new novel is Amnesia. It is published by Knopf. When you wanted to incorporate and look to incorporate the incidents, as you call them, of 1975 and this Battle of Brisbane, What was it that you felt was the main, not just the knowledge, but the main part, the lesson of that story that you wanted to get out?
I don't go for lessons, but I suppose I'll have to accept the language. You know, I mean, yes, why did I put it there?
I mean, it's more than just a, here is the history, draw your own conclusion.
No, absolutely, yes. Well, here's, so it's wartime, Brisbane, Australia and America are allies, and there is a general story, like there's a general story in 1975, you know, that we're allies, friends, supporters. And the reality wasn't really quite like that. And there are all sorts of ways in which it's not quite like that. And there is a degree of antagonism. Some of the more shocking aspects of this that I found out, for instance, is that Australia at that time had this very embarrassing racist policy called the White Australia Policy. And that sort of meant pretty much what it said as far as immigration goes. So then you have Melbourne, wartime, and these ships anchored filled with American soldiers and sailors ready to save our butts, but we can't let them land because they're not all white. And that was solved presumably by some, you know, bureaucratic whatever that allowed people to come and save our lives. So that's part of it, and that couldn't be talked about either. The problem between the Australians and the Americans, in fact, on the ground, I think there's an old expression that they used in Britain during the war, that the Americans were overpaid, oversexed, and over here. And so you get down to a sort of a sexual competition.
Right.
And the American guys had way nicer uniforms. unlike so many of the poorer Australian soldiers, they hadn't had all their teeth pulled out to save money with the dentist later, which I went to school with kids who did this. So you're frightened of dentist bills and pain later, or you just get them all yanked out for a couple of dollars when you leave school. I'm talking about a sort of a level of, you know, so they're 18-year-old kids, some with their cheeks shrunken because they'd lost their teeth. And the Australian uniforms were unlikely to fit them. And the Americans, generally speaking, were much nicer to women. Australian women confronted with American soldiers were bowled over by their politeness and their courtesy, generally speaking. So what breaks out is a fight in the streets of Brisbane between the Australians and the Americans. And this fight goes on for 3 days. There were two fatalities, both caused by American MPs with shotguns. But what happened, before we talk about fatalities, there was just such brutal, brutal violence. And the Americans suffered immensely during this time. So nobody could know about that thing. I thought it might be an interesting time to think about that sort of combat. And Gabby's grandmother conceives Gabby's mother during the Battle of Britain in circumstances which are probably not irrelevant as well.
And that idea of Australia being a client state, to be a colony.
Well, you know, you spent some time as a colony, but you had a sort of a resolution for that particular issue, which is you got rid of them. We never had that resolution. And well, partly, you have to think the histories are very, 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 very different. The Americans go west to wealth. We go west and get lost and die. Yeah, that would be one difference in our encountering the physical country. There was a 50,000-year-old civilization there of Aboriginal people, but we didn't seem to know about that. And most of the first batch of immigrants were convicts and soldiers who didn't want to be there. And the convicts didn't know where they were. They'd been ripped from their home. They nearly died not being able to feed themselves. So you have this particular... And while they all thought that they were part of the British Empire, they were at the very, very bottom of the world. They might as well have been at the moon. they were frightened of everybody around them. They were frightened of the Russians. They were frightened of the Chinese. They were frightened of everybody. There was a situation of incredible cultural and military sort of dependence on Britain. And so, you know, and we got used to sending our young men off to die. We sent them to Gallipoli, you know, and sometimes, and which we celebrated forever. And I sometimes think that was like we were paying a sort of a blood debt. So that, you know, we might have been all originally a convict society, but we were showing we were decent people and we would shed our blood for empire. So by the time the Battle of the Coral Sea comes along, and I think 1943, it's clear that Britain can do nothing to protect Australia. And it's the United States that can do that. And it's MacArthur who comes to Brisbane and sets up his headquarters there. And MacArthur is there at the time of the Battle of Brisbane. One of the things, Joe, that I'm going on with all of this, and I keep on worrying, it makes it seem like you have to know all this to like the book. Well, you don't. And the other thing I want to say, please let me say, I think it's really funny.
It's a very funny book.
And the weight of history is such as that when we talk about the background, I guess one doesn't think one's going to laugh, but I would hope my readers would laugh a little.
Because ultimately, it could be seen as you look at the story of Julian Assange, you look at what you are talking about, what you have just outlined a moment ago, and you could say, okay, this is revenge.
Well, yes, it occurred to me that it might be. I didn't, by the way, seriously ever believe that Julian Assange, who has his own very, very complicated history, had got to doing what he did with WikiLeaks because he was paying back the United States for the events of 1975. But I just thought there's these two unknown things here. We have, you know, we have 75 and we have the character and nationality of a hacker. Couldn't I, the novelist, join them together and create a cause and an effect?
But what it does show to an American reader anyway, and as you say, there are different audiences here, but to an American reader, that we often in this country have blinders on as to what is happening on the ground and what its effects will be immediate and down the road.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, what you do you reap. And the consequences of American interventions in so many countries do continue to plague us every year, most days. We've not had a huge amount of success with those interventions historically.
I do want to end with this question, which is about the title of the book, Amnesia, and ask a very simple question, because it seems that, I mean, yes, we can say that this is the case when it comes to the events of 1975, but I think it can be said about a lot of things, of that fights that are fought over and over and over again in history, that we have this amnesia. In your tackling of this subject, how do you think that comes about? And ultimately, what can we do to learn from this history so that we don't have to battle the amnesia?
I don't know. I think I'd rather go about it the way I think that it's our job to remember. It's our responsibility to remember. It's our responsibility to tell. One of the thrills about this book, when I went back to Australia, expecting to get quite a beating, by the way, because I wasn't sure how I'd be received in the press, was that I found no one beating me at all. The story is accepted. The story re-entered the narrative of the nation, at least for a little, at least briefly, and I personally can't think of any other way to deal with it.
Peter Carey's new novel is Amnesia, published by Knopf. Peter Carey, what a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Best of luck, and again, thanks for sharing with us. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.